Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Penn State basketball tonight, Ohio State at 8:30 on at 8. We'll talk with Adam Jordy from the Columbus Dispatch in a moment. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. The Knicks and the Raptors with Mike Crispino.
Now Carroll looks to get it in, and he can't get it in, and he does get it in to Joseph, who hands off to DeRozan. DeRozan guarded by Rose. DeRozan now outside the arc, moves inside, goes to the long fadeaway. Good! 1.9 left. How good is this guy?
Hey, he's pretty good. Pretty good. So that is our play-by-play call today, courtesy of WEPN. FN, Mike Crispino, Madison Square Garden, last night. All right. Adam Jordy from the Columbus Dispatch joins us. Adam, welcome. It is great to have you with us on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, Ohio State, it looks to me, at least on paper, that their season's pretty similar to what Penn State's gone through. Describe what kind of season Ohio State has had.
The best word that I could use for that would just be simply inconsistent. It's a team that has struggled to put together any sort of stretch of momentum, any sort of stretch of consistently good play. The team that's played some really good games, some really good halves, but just hasn't, for one reason or another, been able to string it together and to parlay that into an extended run of good performances.
Why C.J. Jackson in the starting lineup and no longer Jaquan Lyle?
Well, it started because Jaquan Lyle injured his ankle leading into their road game at Michigan. So he didn't practice for two or three days leading into that game. So they went with C.J., and he played pretty well. That was one of their biggest wins of the season. They beat Michigan at Michigan. And then after that, Jaquan's sister was giving birth back home in Indiana, and she went into a coma and almost died. I mean, it was really dire for a couple of days. So he left the team for 5 or 6 days, and coming off of the ankle injury. So he kind of lost like a week and a half or 2 weeks of the season there, where he either wasn't able to practice or was away from the team. So he's still kind of working his way back into things. And as that has been going on, CJ's played some pretty good basketball and had a great game the other night against Wisconsin. It's interesting, too, because with Jaquan coming off the bench, one of the things that's really held Ohio State back this year is they've had really slow starts to halves. And CJ's been a little bit better at coming out off the bat and kind of getting a feel for the game and directing things, whereas giving Jaquan the chance to see the first couple of minutes off the bench has really kind of helped his mental approach to the game. It's able him to be a little bit more effective because he doesn't have to be learning on the fly, which doesn't really fit into his strong suit.
Okay, it's interesting. I've always felt that Jayshon Tate, in the three seasons in this league, I can't really think of anybody that works harder than him. You see him all the time. What's your impression of him?
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. And it's been said a number of times about this Ohio State team, especially these last two seasons, that if everybody played as hard as Jayshon Tate, they would be 4 or 5 wins better than they have been. He's a guy that he never stops. He never gives up. He plays he's a junkyard dog. He's a guy, if you're playing on the playground, you would pick him on your team and you would never want to play against him. He's just that kind of tenacious player. The thing that's probably most impressive to me is that he is so predominantly left-handed. I mean, I think I can count the number of right-handed baskets he's made on one hand. And
exactly.
Even with that, he gets the ball, you know he's going left. He just hit 1,000 points for his career this season. To get to that number and to be a guy who always scores in the paint and to basically only have one hand, I think it just says something about how hard he works and about how tenacious he is, because I'm still, every time he gets the ball, I'm just thinking, he's going left. Everybody in the gym knows he's going left.
Exactly.
And he still somehow scores.
Exactly. And but he is a tenacious offensive rebounder. I mean, he's only 6'4", as you know, Adam.
That's
he's only 6'4".
Yeah, that's the thing. And, I mean, for him to play the role that he plays and to accumulate the numbers that he has, I mean, this obviously hasn't been the season that Ohio State would like it to be, and they don't have the wins that they would like to have. But, I mean, you can make a very strong argument that he should be an all-Big Ten type of player based on what he gives them night in and night out, despite so many physical liabilities, or limitations, I should say. I mean, it is pretty remarkable.
All right, Trevor Thompson, the transfer from Virginia Tech. Give me an idea, Adam, how much he's improved and where he has improved inside.
Well, he's improved in a lot of ways, mostly just that he's able, up until I would say in the last two and a half weeks or so, he's been able to stay on the court, which has been what was the thing that held him back the most last year. It's just a guy that was consistently in foul trouble. And he had been able to sort of shake that for a good portion of the season. And when he was able to be on the court and be dialed in and be, you know, have everything kind of pointed in the right direction, he's been a guy that's very athletic for his size, has a very strong finisher around the rim, and shoots free throws at a high clip. I mean, he's like a 75% free throw shooter, which, you know, you'll take that from your big man any day of the week. The problem has been that he hasn't been able to stay out of foul trouble these last couple of games, and it's really hampered them. It's remarkable to me that they were able to beat Wisconsin as effectively and as soundly as they did. And they only got, I think, 3 points from Trevor Thompson. He was just in foul trouble the entire game. And so I really think for this team to play at a high level, they need him on the court for extended periods of time. And when he's on the court and he's being impactful, they can run the offense through him, which is something they haven't been able to do in the post for a couple of years.
Mark Loving has hurt Penn State over the years. Has he found a level of consistency now?
No. to be completely blunt about it, I mean, Mark's another one, and it's if you're kind of sensing a theme here as we kind of go through some of these players, it's that Mark has not found any sort of consistent level of play throughout his Ohio State career, and he has had the ability on nights to really rise to the occasion and have a big game or have a big week. But it just doesn't – he's not able to play at that level consistently. And that's one of the more difficult things about Mark. I mean, there's – I don't know it off the top of my head, but I know it's in double digits where he's had at least double-digit games this season where he's had more turnovers than he's had made field goals. And from your senior, from your lone senior, you know, the guy who's been in more games than anybody else, you can't have that. And so – like I said, there are nights, and maybe tonight will be one of them, where he goes off and scores 20. But you don't know with Mark how he's going to play. You don't know what his mindset's going to be. And you know, you don't want to pin everything on one guy. But when that's your senior leader, and he's been your quote-unquote leader for the last 2 years, I think that says a lot about maybe why Ohio State isn't quite where it wants to be. You don't know what you're going to get from your leader on any given night.
When Kata Bates-Diop went out for the season with a stress fracture, what changes did you see in Ohio State?
Well, it changed. It's interesting with Kata because he played the first three games and then had an ankle or a high ankle sprain, came back, missed a couple of games, played like six games, and then now was out for the season. But he was never fully the Kata that we kind of saw last year and had heard about during the summer, where he's really a guy they feel comfortable with him switching off 1 through 5. His length can be really disruptive on defense. He's really a good shot blocker. I really thought that Kata was going to be an all Big Ten type of player this year, and he didn't look like it when he was trying to fight through the injury, and now we kind of see why. Without him, there's fewer things they can do defensively. Offensively, that's one less mismatch they can try to put out there on the court, because he can slash, he can shoot, he can do a lot of things for you. But without him, that's a big part of their rotation that they miss. And the biggest impact, really, it's on defense. They can't pressure. They can't do as much full court stuff. You can't rely on his length to bail guys out. Nobody's really stepped up and filled that role for them this year, which is bad for this year. It maybe gives you some hope for next year that when he's fully healthy, that adds a dimension that they just don't have right now.
Something that's been very difficult for the Ohio State basketball program has been Thad Matta's back. And it's been bad. And I'm saying that from the outside looking in. I mean, you can tell that it's just been bad. How, as you sit there, observe him, and I don't know if he's talked about it a lot, but how bad has it been this year?
Well, as way of backstory, yes, Thad's had back issues for a long time, like a lot of coaches, it turns out, end up dealing with. And he, years ago, a surgery on his back damaged a nerve that leads to his foot, and he can't lift his right foot. It's called drop foot.
Right.
And so if you notice when he walks, he has to wear a brace on his foot, and he kind of shuffles a little bit. And so that's been something that has, I know it's impacted him from a little bit from a mental standpoint. There's things that he just can't do that he used to be able to. And it makes things like just regular exercise difficult. He can't jump in and be part of a drill anymore. But these are all things that he's kind of had 7 or 8 years to deal with now. So they're still frustrating, but like some of that initial shock and some of those initial, you know, concerns are past. I think the sense that I get from talking to him and observing him is that it still bothers him and it's still an issue, but he's in a lot better shape than he was last year. I think he's feeling better than he was last year, and I think that last year he was better than he was the year before that. I mean, everyone that I was, this is my second full year on the beat, but everyone that I talked to who was around 3 years ago said that was a really bad year for him. He does the best that he can. I mean, he has different exercises that he can do. There's like trainers and things like that he works with to strengthen him as best he can. And you know, every time we talk to him at an interview session the day before a game, he's always coming into interviews right out of a workout session, and he's in a full sweat.
Okay.
So I'm not sure exactly what exercises he can do, but I know that he's taking care of himself as best he can, and he seems to be in better shape than he was a year ago.
What about his spirits? Because you know darn well there's people wondering what his future is going to be like at Ohio State because of this. Is that really any issue even worthy of discussion?
Well, it's basically the only thing that people have been talking about in Columbus for the last couple of weeks. There's been a growing outcry that the program's not headed in a good direction, that it's time to show Thad the door. I personally don't think that they're to that point yet. I think that, you know, when you get to 9 tournaments in 10 years and then you have, you know, a year and a half where things haven't gone quite right, I think you sort of earn your right to dig your way out of it. Yeah, I don't know personally how much Thad pays attention to it. He claims that he doesn't hear it at all. I find that hard to believe. The things I know about Thad are that he's a guy that's very big on loyalty and he's very big on pride.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that he knows that he's been very loyal to the university and to the program. When you look at where Ohio State was before he got there, I mean, it's night and day.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that there's probably an aspect of him that when he hears people saying that it's time to move on because it's been a down 2 years, I think that probably bothers him from a loyalty standpoint, a pride standpoint, but I don't think it's diminished his drive or his desire to turn things around or his commitment to where he wants the program to be. One of the things that's really interesting about Thad is he's not a guy that in the off season has a lot of hobbies. Like you don't hear about, and I think it might have been a little bit different when he was more mobile. But like he's not dying in the off season to like go windsurfing or to go like he's a basketball guy. Mm-hmm. And always has been, and so I don't no matter how it would take his body getting to an incredibly poor state for him to not want to fight through it, deal with it, and keep doing what he loves, because I really don't know what else Thad Mata would do if he wasn't coaching.
Well, I always have simple advice who are very quick to pull triggers on certain things. Be careful what you wish for. All right.
Yep.
Adam, it's absolute pleasure. Appreciate the time and your insight very, very much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Great to talk to you.
Adam Jordy from the Columbus Dispatch. Penn State, Ohio State tonight. Jordan Center, 8:30. We're on beginning at 8. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Great to have you with us on the show this evening at 1-800-795-9565. We were talking earlier about what to do with student attendance. I don't know what to do with it. And you know what's interesting, though? is they did a survey. And when you think about the stadium, for example, not just an arena, but the stadium, what is one of the bigger complaints in the last 3 or 4 years you hear about stadium experience? Internet or Wi-Fi connectivity, right? Well, guess what? They did a survey 2 years ago. And what they learned is that football fans, including students, guess what they care about much more than they do about the internet? Clean restrooms. I kid you not. Oregon did a study which surveyed students across all five Power Five conferences. Fans ranked cellular connectivity last on their wish list. The bottom line is, based on the survey, is that they want the usual nuts and bolts. They want the basics. Wow. And it says it straight out. Our data tells us that here are the three most important items going to games, besides obviously the game itself. Parking, restrooms, concessions. How about that? I mean, the same things that have been important for years are still the same things that are important now. People want parking, clean restrooms, bigger restrooms, because they don't want the lines, obviously, and great concessions. Yeah, you could talk about all the money that's being put into places for Wi-Fi and connectivity and, you know, and loud piped in music and loud public address announcing or whatever it happens to be. It comes down to, can I park the car for a decent price close enough? Okay. Can I go to the restroom and not have to, you know, and have it be clean? And can I go to the concession stand and get something reasonably priced to eat? Pretty simple. Number four was, I want a suitless experience. Oh, that's right. I'm not supposed to make you laugh in your current state.
No, I'm fine. It's all good.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to make sure.
No, we're fine.
So I kind of thought the suitless experience would put you over the edge.
No. No reversal of fortune. No.
No. Okay.
So I don't know. Sure. I had enough of that over the weekend. I'm clear for a while.
Final half hour of the show at 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is making 2017 the year of the Elantra. A brand new Hyundai Elantra from Sunbury Motors Hyundai can be yours for only $242 per month. This is not a lease payment. $242 per month on a brand new Hyundai Elantra with America's best warranty. A 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. Sunbury Motors says a 2017 Hyundai Elantra is the absolute best buy for your buck in 2017. Sunbury Motors was voted best car dealership, best quick service, and best body shop. Now add best new compact vehicle with a Hyundai Elantra, and you just made the best decision of 2017. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is making 2017 the year of the Elantra. There's 34 to choose from, starting at $242 per month, tax and tags extra, at 2.99% APR for 72 months to qualified buyers. Sunbury Motors Hyundai declares 2017 the year of the Elantra.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right. Great to have you with us today. Great to have Sean back, despite the ratings spike yesterday. You make it sound like it's an evil thing when I bring that up.
No.
By the way, how are we doing when it comes to our basketball picks? Any better?
Well, let's check our notes here.
I think I picked Arizona over UCLA, so I missed that one.
Okay. Let's see. Kentucky, Florida. Well, we all three of us picked Villanova. Yeah. Kentucky, Florida.
I picked Kentucky.
Yep, I did too. Your brother picked Florida. Yep, you and Kevin picked Arizona. I picked UCLA.
Okay.
So it looks like... I was 3 for 3 for the week.
There you go.
Nice.
You are the one killing it. But you lose 2 points for skipping work yesterday. So technically you're behind. Technically you're not winning. So you're you've only lost one, right?
I believe you're correct on that.
What do you think? I don't pay attention?
Well, I had the standings on another Post-it note. I may have inadvertently threw it out.
Another Post-it note?
Yeah.
That's how we do things? We're on a Post-it note?
Well, since we're only doing three or four games a week, I've been writing them on Post-it notes. And I might have
Post-it notes. Oh. Good, now I'm back to working with the other guy again. Oh, his whole life was a Post-it note. Oh.
I guess I inadvertently threw the Post-it note out with the with
He's
our standings.
Brutal.
Well, you and
brutal.
I. Well, let's see. Well, I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember her off the top of my head. Let's see. Your brother was what? 4 and 3.
Yeah.
And I believe you and I were tied.
We're both like 8 and 1.
So that'd be what? 6 and 1, 4 and 3, 6 and 1. So you and I were tied. So yeah, you and I have been tied 6 and 1.
Yeah.
Going into last weekend. So that would put me at 9 and 1.
You're rolling.
Love it.
You're on a roll. You're almost unstoppable.
Where was this when we were doing the bull picks a couple months ago? That's when I needed it.
Well, once again, the person with all the time in the world won that.
Yeah.
I sell digital media. Nobody knows what it means. I've got all the time in the world.
He's right. Still crying about Arkansas State and the Cure Bowl.
Yeah, that's okay. I have a cure for him. All right. It's called next year emailing them in. And we can change it any way we want. All right. Isn't that amazing, though? Although I guess we have to get into the sports bozo of the day. We haven't done that yet. But I was going to say, it's amazing when it comes to when people look at at a stadium. Everybody's been, Wi-Fi connectivity, Wi-Fi connectivity. Okay. And it turns out that the most important items are parking, bathrooms, and concessions, like they have been for decades. Okay, time for the sports bozo of the day. DeMarcus Cousins, the star that I don't think is a star, has been suspended for one game without pay because he picked up his 18th technical foul of the season. Cousins and Steven Adams were assessed double technicals after getting tied up underneath the basket 32 seconds into the Pelicans' loss to Oklahoma City, 118-110. It is the 18th technical foul for Boogie this season. He now has in his career, which is 7 seasons worth, 101 technical fouls. It was the earliest into a game he's ever been called for a technical. Under NBA rules, a player is automatically suspended for one game without pay after receiving 16 technical fouls for one season. They face the same penalty for every second technical foul thereafter. Yep. Yep, he's changing the fortunes down there. Kirk Cousins, exclusive franchise tag with the Redskins. He said he would accept a trade to the 49ers. Instead, the Redskins placed the exclusive franchise tag on him today. Now, he got a non-exclusive one last year. His reaction on Twitter, quote, tag, I'm it. Because of the exclusive tag, Cousins cannot negotiate with anybody else. Now, they can still trade him if they want to. But in that scenario, the Redskins would have to grant Cousins permission to talk with other teams and work out a long-term deal before any trade could be completed. They have now the opportunity to negotiate a long-term deal with him until 4 o'clock on July 15th. So Kirk Cousins is franchised in back-to-back seasons. That is not unusual. Sean Gilbert, Richmond Webb, Walter Jones, Orlando Pace, Donovan Darius, Julian Peterson, Darren Howard, Charles Woodson, John Abraham, Carlos Dansby, Terrell Suggs, Phil Dawson, Anthony Spencer have all been double franchised in their careers. Kirk Cousins is just the latest, but the first one to do so in 4 years. So he gets the exclusive franchise tag. Meanwhile, the Vikings have looked at Adrian Peterson, and they have decided to decline his option, which means he is a free agent. He can go anywhere he wants, including the New York Giants, which is a possibility. Giants, Tampa Bay, and Houston, and the Dallas Cowboys have been mentioned. With Zeke Elliott, I don't understand why the Cowboys would be an option. So, Adrian Peterson is a free agent. Look, there's a $6 million roster bonus. He's 32 years old. It just didn't make sense for the Vikings to do it. Just didn't. I mean, if I'm sitting in the room and I'm looking at a guy that consistently is missing games because of injuries, am I going to give him a $6 million signing roster bonus? I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't do that at all. So they turned him loose. They turned him loose. So he is now a free agent. They were rating the best franchise tags, which is, by the way, this is the 25th year of the franchise tags. You know that? Sean Gilbert with the Redskins was number one. Peerless Price of the Bills, two. And Albert Haynesworth with Tennessee was three. Matt Forte, four. Anthony Spencer, five. Now, on their list, what are the worst ones? Joey Galloway with Dallas. Steve Hutchinson with Seattle. Greg Hardy with Carolina. Charles Clay with Miami, and Josh Norman with Carolina. 25 years of the franchise tag. That's amazing. But I'm telling you right now, the Adrian Peterson thing, this will be a sweepstakes to see who gets him. But again, my issue with him is, look, when he plays, he's really, really good. The problem is the first word of that sentence, when. The guy has missed at least 13 games in two of the past three seasons. He's a great talent when he plays. But again, that's when he plays. This is kind of touchy in a lot of ways. Very much so. Can somebody explain to me why Kirk Cousins doesn't get a long-term deal? Hasn't he done enough? So, I mean, hasn't he? Now, your guy, Antonio Brown, gets the richest contract for a receiver ever. Which means he's better than Jerry Rice. No? Not so? In today's market, is he worth what they gave him? I would say yes.
Yeah, he's now hovering about the 16, 17 mil per season. So now it's going to be interesting, the other free agent wide receivers, when they hit the market, you know, if their numbers are now going to go up a million or two, try to get closer up to where Antonio's
at.
Yeah,
but you know what? I mean, in today's game, he's one of the 5 to 10 best wideouts in the game today. Plus, you add in him, his value as a punt returner. As for the... now, of course, everyone talked about the Facebook posting from the locker room. Correct? I mean, we discussed it some. You know, everyone needs sanctuary. I mean, especially in a world where cameras are everywhere. I mean, cameras are everywhere. I mean, you know, stop at a stoplight at the Dairy Queen there and... or the Dunkin' Donuts in Hummel's Wharf, and there's a camera right there on the stoplight. There are cameras probably at the Dunkin' Donuts and the Dairy Queen there, right? So everywhere you look, there are cameras. Everyone needs to find some sanctuary somewhere where you're just away from everything and you just let your hair down and you can be yourself. Well, in sports, a locker room is one of those places. And he violated that. But... there is a major difference between a non-fatal mistake and a problem. A non-fatal mistake is something that you do one time. And then when you quickly realize it was wrong or learned your lesson, you don't do it again. And I predict that he won't do it again. Right. If he does it again, now it is a slap against authority. Because he's been told not to do it. Now he becomes a problem. Because, again, he's taking a slap at authority that told him not to do something. So I'm looking at what he did in the locker room after the Chiefs-Steelers playoff game as an immature mistake. Because that's the only time he's been involved in something like that. And hasn't done it since, although after the Patriots game, there was nothing to celebrate. I mean, even Sean couldn't find any positives out of that. That was just a poor performance. But they franchise tag Bell, smart. And they signed Brown to a long-term contract, smart. They've taken two of their core guys and already have some semblance of stability with both of them moving forward. And they have until July 15th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon to negotiate a new long-term deal with Bell, who in the latter stages of the season was averaging 32 touches a game. Big. That's big. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the Sean Carey barbecue in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, wrapping up for today. I think we covered a lot of ground here. Talking about student attendance issues. Other items along the way. And I think you have to do that. You have to bring out what some of these issues happen to be. And how important it is that that you... Yeah, I mean... I think, let's take, for example, we were talking earlier about you know, stadiums and what's important in stadiums. It's still parking, concessions, restrooms. They're still the most important items out there.
But I also think that moving forward, you have had different stadium types in recent years. Okay. And so you have different stadium types in recent years. Okay. And one of the stadium types happens to be when they made the move from various ballparks and stadiums into multi-purpose cookie-cutter places like Riverfront, Bush, Vet, Three Rivers Stadium, places like that. I mean, Boston was going to build one, for goodness sakes. All right? So they were going to build one. Excuse me. And that was the trend. And now the trend has been to building a Citizens Bank Park. Awesome. What, 43,000? PNC has fewer than 40,000. And then I look at what they're doing in Los Angeles with a new football stadium. 80,000 seats? I'm sorry, that's not the right trend in today's sports. And that's just not the trend. And I think that you're making a mistake in today's... I look at that and I'm saying to myself, that's too many seats in today's world. It just is. And I'm, you know, and I only bring that up because the I think it's an issue, and I don't think what they're doing in Los Angeles is smart. And I'm seeing MLS, for example, they seem to get it. 20 to 30,000 seats. Now, I'm not saying that's what they need in football. But in football, if you're building a new stadium in football, if you're between 50 and 65,000 seats, I think you're smart. I was looking at University of Minnesota Stadium, obviously on Saturday. I've done a couple of games in there, but I was talking to Dick Girardi about this, and I said, Dick, they made that thing 50,000 seats. I said, that's the right size. I mean, that's the right size. I said, in today's market. And between 50 and 65,000 seats, I think, works. You want to have your tickets to be a little bit in demand. And arenas? And we now have all these 20, 21,000 seat, 19,000 seat arenas. Schottenstein Center at Ohio State's 19,000. 17,000 for the Kohl Center in Madison. You've got the KFC Yum Center in Louisville's over 20,000. Rupp's 23,000. Tennessee's 24,000. But a lot of those seats go unsold. Now, I can tell you right now, at Ohio State, they're averaging 12 to 14,000 a game. There are 5 to 7,000 empty seats. Now, for concerts here, you need seats. But we all know the arena here is too big. I mean, right, at Penn State, the arena should be probably 8 or 9,000 seats. That's realistic. In today's market, markets change, interest changes. And when you're building, you've got to think about the circumstances and build it in. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK, Sunbury.